Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., the man who is glad that you are with me on another Power Friday, because you are going to be in for some outstanding information. You know, we always encourage you, be ready to grab hold of it so you can put it into play in your lives. And today, Power Friday, Dr. Joseph Hobbs from the Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University is our guest, yours and mine. And I'm so glad he is here with us. Dr. Hobbs, it's been a minute, but how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good to see you again. And of course, a living legend in the United States of America in the Augusta area, pioneer of pioneers.
Wow. That's hard to all absorb.
And it's true. A pioneer of pioneers. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to, a lot of you know, because some of you know Dr. Hobbs better than I do. I've known him for a few decades now, but some of you know him more intimately than I do. But some of you are going to be getting some information today that you are not aware of. And I'm telling you, you'll find out why I say he is a pioneer of pioneers. Dr. Hobbs, one of the things that you're currently doing is you're chairing the Department of Family Medicine. But that's not what you were always doing. When we go back to quite a few years before you began to chair that department, you were a medical student at a college that had not yet fully embraced the idea of diversity amongst its medical students. Share with us what that was like, and then move us down the timeline to the point where you finally became chairman of the Department of Family Medicine.
Well, I might need to just go back a couple of years earlier than that, which is really in high school at Ara Johnson Junior High School, where my science teacher was Rosa T. Beard, who introduced me and a bunch of other science-interested students to the scientists up at the Medical College of Georgia, because we were into science fair projects and things of that sort. And we met with people in the Department of Hematology Oncology there, chaired by a guy by the name of Claude Starr Wright, who was a section chief of that area. And he and the scientists who worked in his division began to offer us opportunities to come up on Saturdays just to work in the labs with those individuals on our science fair projects. And from those science fair projects, these kids ended up going to state fairs and winning, national fairs and winning, and international fairs and winning. And that was the process that kind of cemented my relationship with the Medical College of Georgia, because as a young African-American student in a segregated environment, because public school systems at that point in time were segregated, and having science resources within our schools not adequate, these people helped to fill in the gaps for kids of our generation who were, quite frankly, very passionate about science because of the space race and engineering and men in space and the biology of all of that. And that just made that be something that we always wanted to do. And as a result of that, those people from the Medical College of Georgia who were willing to sacrifice time on Saturdays to work with us and things like that, that cemented for us a long-standing relationship. It actually went into college, because in college I had part-time jobs there. I worked with that same division on a hormone now that is well-known. It's erythropoietin. But I worked with some of the fundamental scientists who were discovering exactly what that molecule looked like and things like that. And to be in that environment kind of gave me kind of the sense that I could have a place in science. And the question was, where was I going to get that background education from? Notably, Dr. Wright's biggest concern for me at that point in time was that as he was mentoring me, he was concerned that he was mentoring me to go someplace else, because at that point, the Medical College of Georgia was not accepting African-American students. And that was an awkward time for him, because he recognized the strength of not just me, but those other students' commitment to science. But yet that school could not offer them, because the state laws kept the schools segregated. When I went off to college, right about that time, that's when the rules changed, the laws changed, and MCG began to actively recruit individuals. And while I was in college, there were two or three people who were admitted to the Medical College of Georgia as the first. And Dr. Wright, who had knew that my interest was in biochemistry, and I wanted to go off and do a PhD, continued to urge me to continue to think about medicine, think about medicine, mm-hmm. think about medicine. Quite frankly, I applied to one medical school, and I only applied to that medical school because of Dr. Wright, only because of him. And then there are several other circumstances that made me not be able to take the fellowship offers that I had to other Northeastern schools for biochemistry. And I went to medical school, and this was in the midst of the Vietnam War and things like this, kind of as a second thought, only to realize in 2 years that everything that I thought that I wanted to do was in error, that I fell in love with medicine quite quickly, working with patients, watching their immediate feedback to you and things of this nature, getting the sense that people trusted you and that they believed in you, that they put their confidence in you. They told you very private things and things of this nature because they trusted you to make good decisions for them and things like that. All of those things were the things that enticed me to enter into medicine. And really in my second year in medicine, that's when I began to realize that this was the place for me. The school was making these active efforts to desegregate. And I say efforts to desegregate because merely bringing students into an environment like that is not desegregation. What you've done is that you've put the pieces in place for a desegregation process to occur. And I'm certain that there were segments of the class that were uncomfortable with us being there. I'm certain that that occurred at level of the faculty too as well. But we persevered. The system persevered. And quite frankly, the year after we came there, we were 8 students. There were 16 students thereafter and then 20 mm-hmm. thereafter. And so I think that the school made a tremendous effort to respond to the needs of having Georgia residents be educated in their Georgia medical schools, as opposed to having to go off someplace else. Many of them went to Meharry and Howard for fundamental education. And the Northeastern schools were coming to Atlanta, just really sucking our intellect someplace else. And once those kids were out of Georgia and being educated out of Georgia, they didn't come back. So for MCG finally to be able to provide a platform for the education of young minority students, that was a big thing. And so very early on as a student and then as a resident there, I spent a lot of time with working with administration and things of this nature, trying to find ways to actively recruit young people into the college. I work with what is now called our Student Education Enrichment Program, the early version of that early on as a student a proctor for that particular environment, because this was a way that we kind of went across the state trying to find young African-American students who were very interested in biomedical sciences and things like this, give them a summer experience with that, and then hopefully be able to facilitate and sustain their interest and, quite frankly, hope that they would apply to mm-hmm. us. And that worked. An awful lot.
And you mentioned, though, that that was a process, though. Just getting students of color into medical school wasn't the beginning and the end of desegregation. That was a first step. What needed to take place once the student of color was there to further develop the process? What did the process continue to consist of?
Well, I think that one of the things that actually helped a lot in this is that as medical students, the central portion of our education was around a patient. And when we're looking at patient care settings, the nature of their illness at times would make it possible for people to have conversations that they would not naturally have. among themselves. So let's say, for example, you have a white farmer from South Georgia. And so a group of people are taking care of that farmer from South Georgia. Well, there might be a medical student there who is from that region who understands something particular about the employment activities of that individual that might contribute to his wellness or his disease state. And you begin to understand the mixture and the differences that ethnicity, poverty or lack thereof, all those sorts of things have on the general welfare of patients that we take care of. And I think in the midst of those conversations, although we did not explicitly talk about racism, we didn't explicitly talk about the issues that may separate us along ethnic lines, the patients drew us in to what I would think would be a comprehensive evaluation of that patient such that we understood the implications of race on that person's disease process, the implications of poverty on that particular patient's disease state, the implications of a whole bunch of other different situations. And we begin to kind of get a sense of the commonality that existed between us. And the commonality was that desire to help. And the way that you help is that you got to have tools to help. And sometimes my experience, because I'm of a certain ethnicity, is helpful to you in the way that you deal with someone of that ethnicity. Sometimes because I am of a different ethnicity and I'm looking at a patient who is at a different ethnicity, I could step away and have a little bit more objective view of what may be going on with that particular patient. So the fundamentals of these discussions that we had as students around patients, facilitated usually by engaged faculty members and things of this nature, helped us to deal with the issues of racism, disparities, all of those things that get people trapped into certain tiers of health status, not because of anything they've done. It's just that they're trapped there, and then we begin to realize what we can do as physicians to be able to address those disparities as well. So it was a learning environment that was created, probably accidentally. Okay. But what we did is that we began to build upon that, and being a part of the faculty, to be tried to make sure that that was a part of the way that we educated students all along. The diversity of the patients that we take care of at the Medical College of Georgia forced us to be diverse in our thought process, forced us to kind of think beyond racial boundaries, economic boundaries, and things of this nature. And so those were exciting years for us.
And you mentioning how the diversity, whether it had to do with class, whether it had to do with ethnicity, you mentioned, you name it, it helped the practice. It makes me think of something that I'd like for you to begin to share with us when we come back, and that is the role that primary care has been playing in the practice of medicine. We've been reading and hearing for quite some time now that there is a shortage of primary care physicians. And that's where, ladies and gentlemen, part of this discussion that we're going to have when we come back comes into play, where I was sharing with you that Dr. Hobbs is a pioneer of pioneers. Stay with us and you'll find out the interplay between his pioneering efforts, which have reaped some tremendous rewards, and primary care at the Medical College of Georgia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. ¶¶